audio courtesy of ESPN. Good morning, Tone.
Hey, Kenny.
This is a little bit of fun last night. Carl Ravitch took a shot at the Guardians, but, you know.
Why would he do
nothing,
such a thing?
Nothing worse than what any fan has said here over the last couple
of
weeks.
Why would he do such a thing?
Well, it was, you know, Junior Caminero was in the finals of the Home Run Derby, and I think he said something to the effect of, I think they're regretting it now, trading him away. Which, yeah, that was the one they wear. That was definitely one they wear. That happens. You know, you're going to have that. In the words of Mike Pettine, you know, in the words of Kevin Stefanski, we own that, and, you know, we'll move on and we get better from it. We'll try to get better from it. We'll see whether or not they do.
You would think, especially in that sport, in baseball, as opposed to, like, in the NBA, when you trade, the guys are such known commodities when they are traded, even if they don't play all that much.
Yeah.
The people that cover the league, they know every single guy in the league inside and out. And so when there is a trade like that, it's under the microscope so much from moment one when there is a trade. In baseball, there are so many trades of guys that you've never heard of that are prospects,
yep,
that even guys that are in the league, mm-hmm, that have started to build a reputation. And then oftentimes it's just forgot about. It's just whatever. And so now this is going to be one that's going to come up because he's, you know, playing in the most games he's played in. He's a regular everyday player. And not only that, he's got 23 home runs. And then he's, you know, on national television last night with everybody watching. So home run derby.
There was another thing that happened with him where there was a 17-year-old Sam Musterer. And it's in the Athletic article. Usually it would just say unknown kid, but the Athletic wrote about it. So, I mean, might as well. He gave an interview.
We know the whole background.
An interview. Sam Musterer, whose father is the official scorer of the Atlanta Braves, which is, by the way, a tougher job than you think. Mm-hmm. It's a very, Owen knows, you know that.
I would much rather my child's name be out than people know that I'm the official scorer.
You deal with a lot of people glaring at you as an official scorer. It's a much more difficult job than a lot of us realize.
It's thankless.
Yeah. Like the first time I ever did it, they were like, hey, they like came to me when I was with the now Rubber Ducks, formerly the Arrows. Hey, can you official score today? And I'm like, yeah, fine. They were like, oh, thank God. Okay. Like they looked at me like they were really putting me out. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like official scoring and immediately like second inning. That needs to be changed. Well, no, it's
not the official score.
It's an error. He booted it all over the place. That needs to be changed. I go, I'm not changing it. And it was like that. We were playing like Binghamton. It was their play-by-play guy, who's a nice guy. The guy was miserable. He hated it.
He's probably also somewhere in the PR department.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're doing it all.
Because I told you when we were in, I've told you this story before. I might have said it on the air. When I was in Portland, we were on the road in Portland, Maine, and there was, I want to say it was John Drennan hit a hot shot, like the same situation. Hot shot towards third. Guy bobbles it a little bit, but it stays in front. And they wanted to count it for a hit. And the official scorer counted it for an error. And the guy is actually the trainer for the Guardians now. He was the trainer then. And he was like, hey, you need to argue for that. You need to go in there and argue for that. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, you need to get in there and argue and make that a hit. And I'm like, really? And he's texting me like, yes, get in there next inning and argue for that and make that a hit. Okay.
Yeah.
And I go in there, I'm like, hey, and it was like this crotchety old New England man. Like he was not drinking ginger ale and hey, what do you want from me? Like that type of thing. And I'm like, have a good day. And I walked back. I was like, hey, man.
Not saying anything.
I went in there and I fought for it.
I pled my case.
Just want to say you guys got a nice little ballpark here. A lot of fun. And I left it. I'm like texting him going, yeah, man, he told me to bleep off. Like, da-da-da-da-da. Like, I
was unwavering.
They were.
Stubborn old man.
They fight for that stuff. So Sam Musterer, whose father is the official scorer of the Atlanta Braves, and I believe does Georgia Tech games, mm-hmm, as well, according to the article, he robbed a home run over in left field of Junior Caminero. Here's the play.
Junior, a line shot.
Got a chance. Oh, he stopped.
Oh,
they counted it, though. They did.
They counted it.
The umpire counted.
counted it.
Good, because that was a home run, it looks like, over the wall that was robbed.
It disrupted Caminero as well.
Yeah, you can't. Oh, man, that's tough.
What appeared to be a home run robbery, and everybody in the ballpark is looking at it, as is Major League Baseball.
Good job by him to get out there. Hey, listen, they're kids at the end of the day. As long as they got it right. They did. They got it right. That's fine.
Audio courtesy ESPN.
But they didn't get it right.
Well, it was a home run. It was a home. Well, they robbed it a home run. They called it a home run.
It was Torrey Hunter and Barry Bonds all over again. It was the same play.
He caught the ball. No home run. If I were the official score, I'd say no humdinger. Sorry.
Bags, Mr. Bell.
Boy, I got to tell you.
Home run's a home run. And it means you got to get it way over. If someone robs you, they rob you.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie, I definitely saw the replay of this after a long day at golf out there. Shout out to Austin Carr.
Yeah, you were in the Austin Carr outing. Well done.
But when I saw this at first, because I saw the headline, robbed him of a home run in The Athletic, I'm like, oh, I bet people are really mad. And then it said, no, you know, the umpires came out and then they decided it was a home run. And then I watched the replay and I'm like, boy, could the home run derby be spiced up a bit if you put a bunch of kids out there who are trying to rob them of home runs? I think it would be awesome. Then the kids would be running into each other. Well, derby in the outfield.
Where does it stop, though, Anthony? Do we have pogo sticks out there now?
Good. I mean, let's add some elements.
Giant gloves.
You had Pat McAfee out there in the shirtless jersey that the commissioner gave him. And he was talking about Kyle Raleigh having the biggest ass in baseball, which people were complaining about that. Can I do like a quick media thing real quick?
Okay.
People were complaining about Pat McAfee. And it's like, guys, it's like him and Stephen A. Smith are the only ones there with a bunch of personality. Like Chris Berman, I would love Chris Berman to be there. I know it was their last, broadcast of the Home Run Derby because ESPN is just swearing away baseball. It would have been cool to have Chris Berman doing the play-by-play of it. But that was a guy who had all the personality in the world. Mm-hmm. And
stories on stories on stories. Then you could just go.
Yes. And then you have, I'm sorry, like Carl Ravitch doesn't really, I'm sure he's a solid man and broadcaster, but it's pretty dry. Same thing with Eduardo Perez and basically everybody else out there. So it's a home run derby. And before it was for 30 years, it was just baked in. Here's Chris Berman. He's got enough personality to carry it, but also has the gravitas of play-by-play that he could take care of all that stuff. And now you got one guy who has a personality that they throw onto everything because he's the only one that does. So you're kind of putting him, I can't rip on him if you're putting him in a spot where he's not the very best at, right? I can't go rip it on Pat McAfee for that. It's like, hey, the paycheck's the paycheck. You're there.
It's just that.
Go out there and do it.
If that is not, you know,
your specialty.
If you are not into what McAfee brings to the table, because he's going to be very polarizing.
Yes.
If you're not into it, it's a total turnoff. And because he's been given such a platform, I certainly can understand why people like. I think he's
a former NFL punter too. I mean, he's a football guy.
Yes, true. So he's crossing over to do baseball. He's got to be really good at this for you to want, you know, to be entertained by him. And if you don't like Pat McAfee, and let's say there are a bunch of baseball people out there that don't even like football. Like, I bet you there were people watching last night that are like, stop shoving football down my throat. We get it.
Yeah.
We get it all the time. People telling us. And so how do you think they felt where they're like, finally, we get some baseball guy. Oh, a punter. Oh, of course they had to put a punter from the NFL because he's not overexposed enough. Like, I could see them saying that.
Well, again, you pay him enough money, it's him. Like, you're going to put him on all these things. And I'm not going to blame a guy for taking any money and trying to do the best job he did. I don't think he was half-assing it, but
Was he good?
I thought he was.
Or was he just cutting promos?
No, he was him. He was him. So anything he does, he's going to do his thing, and people are either going to like it or they're not going to like it. So, and I think that, definitely what Lima
it
said
was during intros, and intros are supposed to be overhyped, right?
Yes.
Like, that's what he does. He's the wrestling
guy
now.
Yeah.
And
it is in so many ways it is what it is, which is a terrible thing to say about anything. But yeah, there was definitely a lot of baseball people who wanted to see home run derby in its classic sense, which you're really not going to get anymore. And he's the only, like, Carl Ravitch is not going to bring enough zeal to the broadcast
at the home run derby party that I attended last night.
I was going to ask how long was everybody up last night?
Oh, way too long. We had one for some of the boys on our baseball team. One of the moms hosted it.
And that was awesome.
They drew names out of a bucket, and that was your guy, right?
Like, okay.
You had to follow him.
That's fun.
Yeah. One of the sisters won the main prize.
Good.
So it was good, but yeah, the kids did not care that Pat McAfee was yelling or that Carl Ravitch wasn't Chris Berman. Like, that stuff didn't matter.
Yeah.
Well, now he's been away from it for a while. I guess the kids wouldn't know about Chris Berman.
Oh,
and
No.
Do they?
They're 11. They don't know.
Oh, they wouldn't know at all.
And really, baseball, like, it's not like they've been paying a bunch of attention. We don't sit down and go, Sunday night baseball's on the TV, guys. Gather around.
Did it flow last night, or did it go way too long?
Oh, I guess it was flowing, but it was still too long. It's because they start at 8.
Yeah.
Well, they start.
I felt the same way you do.
I don't know when they actually start hitting baseballs. It's past 8 before they start hitting baseballs.
Oh, yeah, I figured that. So we're talking home run derbies over 3 hours.
Yeah.
That is a long time to crown a freaking home run derby champ.
Yeah. Well.
Especially when it's the same thing.
And I still feel like it's sped up compared to Josh Hamilton hit like 57 home runs one year. That went into midnight.
Oh. It was, well, at least the good thing for baseball, at least
and
the
then
guy
he
who
didn't win.
The guy who everybody wanted to see and everybody wanted to root for won. I mean, Kyle Raleigh has taken. I mean, when I was out there for a game, the fans just gravitated. Now he's having this incredible season as a catcher where, I mean, he's a switch hitting catcher for crying out loud and he's doing all this. He is a star that a lot of people love. And the story with his dad, I think, throwing to him and his brother who was catching.
His brother, who's 15, was catching.
Who is taller than him. Who is taller than him.
Todd Sr. and Todd Jr. And Cal is not named after Todd, but the 15-year-old.
Can you ask about the dumper for the 15-year-old? Does he have a burgeoning dumper as well?
I don't know. He is, you know what? I'm going to wait for a while, and then I will discuss dumpers on the family of Kyle Raleigh there. I'm going to wait a few years.
Because that seems to be the only thing people seem to be talking about. Because a few days ago, we were like kind of dancing around it on the air. Like, what do they call him?
Yeah,
can we even say that? And then last night, I guess, they made it the focal point.
He is a, let's call it what it is. He is a voluptuous man.
Yes. And, he's got some curves.
He
had to generate power from somewhere. Yes. Yeah.
And he's able to generate power, and he's just a fun personality that everybody loves. So I'm glad, like, the star of the show.
Cause they don't let you use the cream of the clear anymore, so you got to start.
You got to have some cushion for the pushing home runs out of there. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, cushion for the pushing the home runs out there. But it was the star that everybody wanted to see. I thought that the Sam kid robbing the home run was funny. I agree with you. I don't think it should have counted. I know they counted it to take heat off the 17-year-old kid because we don't want – it wouldn't have been Steve Bartman because it's the home run derby for crying out loud, but you never can tell on this stuff. So it's like just give the kid the home run, give Junior Canyonero the home run, and let that worry about it. But I thought overall it was it's fun. The split screen can be a little bit much because they're going so fast, but Hernan, it was – I had fun watching it last night. I thought it was a good final performance from ESPN or what. Are they going to have it on Fox next year? I mean, the All-Star game's tonight on Fox.
It's got to be, right?
I would assume.
I hope so.
Has the home run derby, in your estimation, always been like on par with the NBA stuff or ahead?
I think it's ahead. Home runs are timeless. When I watch, like, I've defended the dunk contest. The dunk contest just isn't done by stars anymore.
Yeah.
But I defend the dunk contest because I go, you know, it's hard to be creative and do this stuff, dunking a basketball. Like, where the league started when I was first born and started watching basketball to where it is now, where a guy like Michael Jordan from the free throw line was a big deal. And now you got guys like, you had guys jumping over cars, over boom mics, hopping over people's heads, that type of thing. Like, they're trying to be as creative as possible, and people rip it every single year. Where home run derby is the same thing it's been for 100 years. Home run derby is the same thing. Remember the old TV show on Classic Sports?
Black and white, Harmon Killebrew.
Yes, and they did it at the other Wrigley Field out in Los Angeles. And you, like, home run derby is timeless. Long balls, people love. It's all it is glorified batting practice, but America loves it, and I can't help it.
You mentioned, though, about in the NBA, the stars aren't doing the dunk contest.
Yeah. This is a star. Kyle Rowley's a star.
Well, where was Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani last night?
I think that's one of the criticisms. Well, you had Jazz Chisholm.
They're the two biggest dudes.
Yeah, Jazz Chisholm.
How are they not in the home run derby?
After every time that Jazz Chisholm hit one straight to the grass, they would show Aaron Judge.
Yep.
Every single time.
He had three. Jazz Chisholm had three home runs last night.
So Judge has not participated in the home run derby since 2017. Isn't that a problem?
You know, they don't want to, quote-unquote, mess up their... Well, Aaron Judge will get hurt doing it, for all we know. I mean, those guys, very brittle. But yeah, we don't have stars doing it, plus...
Why didn't they have Shohei Ohtani pitching in the home run derby?
Okay, that might be a little bit fun. Coming up in a little bit, what actually makes a star? I like that idea of the home run derby party as well. You can't sit there and complain about the sport dying.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I mean, not so awesome for you, Owen, because
glad the kids are involved.
You had to drive
home. Awesome at all. That was fine. I was on my phone the whole time. Caden's in Fargo. I'm watching him, like it was the whole deal.
Well, I wish we could talk about that for the entire show, but we got to get back to the business at hand. So yesterday, there were a lot of people who wanted. There were a lot of people who wanted us to sit there and say that this woman who has thrown these, or has made this criminal complaint at Quinshot Judkins. They wanted us to say some really irresponsible stuff about her that just was not going to happen. Like, you can say whatever you want to on the internet without fear of reprisal. Lyman and I can't, so you have to call it down the line as best you can until every person has their say in a court of law on this.
Honestly, Kenny, it was unfathomable to me.
Oh, and we've just been through this.
Well, we've just been through this so many times that we've kind of got it down to a science now. Where we can't get too careful or comfortable though. Well, here's what I'm saying. Like, me and you were adamant yesterday that we were both not going to go off the rails on Judkins until we got some facts, and we were also not going to victim shame, which I could not believe the sheer amount of people who are comfortable doing that, and they just pick their side in domestic violence cases. They pick sides. Like, I can't believe people do that. Now, we're supposed to have a little more of a responsibility, actually a lot more, because we can't come on the air and say things that aren't facts and speculate on something. We weren't there. We weren't in the car. We don't have pictures. We don't have videos.
I can only go from reports and when the videos come out.
And we played comments, or we shared comments from the defense attorney. So we did make it clear, like, yes, that's what a defense attorney typically says. It was almost out of central casting, the things that the defense attorney was saying, but we're like, we're going to share these because he is the advocate for the Browns player.
Yeah, and I haven't heard anything from a prosecutor yet. Right. And we just got the report yesterday.
So, and then we're going to share those. We are not going to do this. We have a court case that is going to happen, or at least we'll see. We'll see what how the situation, you know, the litigation, how it presents itself. But I'm glad you guys can feel comfortable going on social media, just trashing either one side or the other. Like, we're never going to do that.
Social media, again, you can create how many different accounts and just go after whatever and do all that stuff, especially in some of the social media platforms that are out there. So there is a several paragraph report here that spans two different pages. I'm not going to read the whole complaint.
There's that much of a complaint?
Well, there's just several paragraphs of the setup and what it... What initiated the possible argument that escalated to physical, a physical confrontation with allegedly with Quinshot Judkins and the woman involved here, stated that she arrived at Fort Lauderdale Airport, defendant on Monday, July 7th, late in the evening. Victim stated that after departing the plane, she used the restroom. The victim stated she emerged from the restroom and then proceeded to baggage claim with the defendant. The victim stated that at baggage claim, the defendant stated, "Oh, wow, I can't believe you, and I'm so done with you." The victim stated she had no clue as to why the defendant stated this. The victim then entered a Lamborghini SUV rental vehicle that was already waiting for them at the airport. The victim advised they exited the airport in the vehicle. The victim stated the defendant was showing frustration after he read text messages from family members. The victim stated she was trying to explain to the defendant that the messages were not true. The victim stated she suffers from anxiety, began to stutter while explaining herself. The victim stated that the defendant then punched her in the mouth, chin area with a closed fist. The victim still had visible bruising on her chin area. The victim showed me, being the officer who's writing this report, showed me a photograph that she took the following day of her chin lip area. The bruising was clearly evident. Later in the statement, the victim stated that the defendant turned around while he was driving as she got back into the back seat. The victim stated that the defendant turned around while she was while he was driving and struck her additional times in the left arm and thigh. The victim had visible bruising on her left arm and thigh. The victim also displayed photographs that were taken just after the incident with similar bruising. The victim stated that while the defendant was striking her in the instant, she began to kick her feet in his direction to defend herself. It goes on from there, but those are the two big things.
And I mean, this got reported. And as we know, the NFL, because that's the question that is in front of us. And, whether or not, you know, the relationship between these two, how it went south, I remember a lot of people, you know, yesterday were talking about why did she come forward right away, as if we don't have, you know, endless domestic violence cases that explain a lot of that. It's disheartening to, you know, two young people that know each other. It's disheartening to see anything like that. So we're going to look at the football side of things because we have to talk about that. We're a sports talk radio station and people want to know how seriously the NFL is going to take this. You know, the details, they were in the New York Post yesterday. I mean, as a national publication, so the New York Post, you had national NFL writers weighing in on this. And what, Kenny, do we know about the NFL when they step in on things like this?
Well, they're going to protect the shield as best they can. So they already don't like this. So that means there's already probably a suspension coming around, depending on what the investigation shows.
And I would assume
significant size.
Yes.
Plus, I don't know how, but the suspension gets a little bit muddy because, again, he has not signed to a contract yet. So what do you do about the contract? Do you sign a contract as soon as you possibly can? I don't know. Again, I don't even know if he's allowed in the state right now or allowed to leave the state that he got arrested in.
The commissioner's exempt list, you know, has been used in situations like this, but that is basically suspended with pay.
Well, you can exempt them, then suspend them, correct? Yeah. I think that's what happened with Michael Hall.
But you're going to get paid, but you're not going to be with the team. All right, but how is he getting paid?
I have to go back and check that record, but I think it's happened before.
This is a little more of a bizarre circumstance. Either way, I mean, I'd be shocked if he's not missing at least a third of the season. And, you know, we had Zach Jackson yesterday talking about just how big of a deal it is when somebody is not there in their first camp. You hear guys in the NFL talk about how they were put behind the eight ball and never, never recovered.
So yesterday there was, you know, we asked the question and there were a lot of people, well, how can you blame it on the Browns? There's been no previous instance of this. There was no warning signs of any of this. There was nothing said that Quinshon Judkins could be trouble. And then this story comes out and it seemed that immediately a lot of people changed their mind on that, where it's like, now it's the Browns' fault, which I have to tell you, Tone, what's right is right in the argument where I'd said it's another log on the fire against them. Like a lot of people, once they saw the report, Tom Pelissero had put it out, once a lot of people had read the details of this report, of these allegations in this case that we're getting into here, is that they changed their mind and, well, this is why they're a moribund franchise. This is why I can't take them seriously. Unserious franchise. Like, it got to that part, and I thought, well, again, the truth of if they didn't know, if nobody had any inclination, the people who do, the former FBI people who do these background checks and all this, if there was nothing there saying that there was any sort of a warning, the question was, how could you blame the Cleveland Browns? And my issue was, in this case, you wouldn't, but at the end of all of it, you would. And all it took was the details for a lot of people to change their minds and go, this is why the Browns are the Browns. I told you this would happen. Is where you can say, hey, that's a tough break for Andrew Berry in the grand scheme of things, as you drafted a guy in the second round who right before camp has these allegations thrown against him, which are really ugly when it comes down to the police report there. But that's the entire case of it there. It's a frustrating thing for a fan base. And even though, you know, I can't blame Andrew Berry for drafting the guy, it's still going to be thrown against him fair or unfair, that's the way it's going to go. And it showed yesterday afternoon after this report came out.
And I get all that, obviously. Every player, whether they get injured, whether they're busts, you know, whether they're nowhere near as good as where you drafted them, they all go in the same bucket of did the player work out or did the player not work out? And unfortunately, coming off a 3-14 year, I think this is the lowest the fan base has probably been on Andrew Berry. Like, I can't imagine that his approval rating has been worse than it is right now. And so I don't know how, as short of them getting off to a good start, and we've all seen the schedule, I have no idea how he's going to rebound from this at all, and everything else that's happened.
You have to understand how much of the offense I thought was going to have to be tailored around Quinshon Judkins to set this thing up. Now, I don't know very much. I saw Dylan Sampson in college, but there's nothing there that I certainly didn't see as much Dylan Sampson as I saw Quinshon Judkins. And you saw that, hey, one's a second-round pick, one's a fourth-round pick. You take one to be an heir apparent, and now the guy who's supposed to be an heir apparent, I don't know when we're going to see him. I have no idea when we're going to see him, and clearly he has things that are more serious in his life than playing for the Cleveland Browns. He's got to get some things figured out here when it comes to the law before he's able to rejoin this football team. And then, well, he's got to get things figured out with the law, and then he's got to get things straightened out with the NFL before he's ready to rejoin this football team and contribute at all. So as of right now, I have to see this after this report comes out, that this is a lost season for Quinshon Judkins. That puts your offense already in a tough spot. And your offense was one of the worst in the league last year. And I believe by some metrics, the worst since 1999 when it comes to your total team offense. This is a tremendous blow. Tremendous. I don't feel any different about the Browns front office as I did going forward in the weekend. There's not a lot of trust there. There's hope, and there's a big difference between those things. Because I don't want guys to get let go, but I also don't have any evidence to back up anything that says that no, they shouldn't be let go at the end of the year. There shouldn't be any problems there. And when you lose Quinshon Judkins for the foreseeable future, like I'm telling you, man, I think that this is a significant hit to this offense, and what the offense was going to be able to do probably still wasn't overwhelmingly great with four different quarterbacks in the mix for the Cleveland Browns starting job. It wasn't overwhelmingly great, but this is just not going to help because it's still going to force what their plan was going to do. And I'm going to get to the phones here in just a second. What their plan was going to be was Quinshon Judkins, Dylan Sampson, and then you really put Jerome Ford where he deserves to be, which is third down back.
Yep.
And kind of get him out of the backfield because there is some playmaking ability out there. He can get out there and get to a top speed. Now that you wouldn't have this man for the foreseeable future, and hey, guys could have got hurt, and it could have hurt anyway. I would honestly, in this case, I would rather a person get hurt than what a player get hurt than what this is, for crying out loud. I mean, this is some ugly stuff here. What this is now is it forces Jerome Ford into a tough spot, and it's like you didn't even get a second round pick. So now your offense is already, it feels like your offense is already behind the eight ball and they haven't even started camp yet. What do they report Friday? I think the rookies start showing up and everything. So it feels like you haven't even got a chance to get started yet and you're already behind. And that's something that Kevin Stefanski is going to have to make up because I do think that there's probably a threshold that he needs to get to 2026. What that threshold is, I'm not sure. We'll see how it fits during the actual end of the season. 216-474-0092. Dustin in D.C. He's listening on the Free Odyssey app. He's next up on the Fan. Hello, Dustin.
You're darn right, boys. How's it going this morning?
It's not going bad. Yeah, that's. I mean, it's been worse for me. I mean, personally, you know, this isn't good, but it's been worse.
Yeah, no, I understand. Look, ultimately, hey, fellas, we're looking at what? What do we project? Maybe a 6, 7, 8 win team at the beginning of the, like right now, right?
You don't have a 7 or 8
in play. That's more than most people project them.
All right. All right, Anthony, that's very fair. Okay, so what's the difference here? There's none. We might get a little less tread on the tire. Now, that's not demeaning the situation. Understand that it's a very serious allegation. At the end of the day, as a Browns fan, and we're talking about just on the field only, none of it really matters. Like, you don't have a quarterback in place yet. All right, so look, we got two backs, and we're going to do double tight end. That's fantastic. That's great. Doesn't matter. 6, 7, 8 wins at bare minimum is kind of what is projected here. Like, so, like, if you have Junkins, if you have, Dylan, what is it, Thompson, whoever the heck it is.
Dylan Sampson, Ford, yeah.
Sampson, that one. Like, does it really matter? Like, honestly, at the end of the day, as a Cleveland Browns fan, does it, how?
It does. He was their second-round pick. How could it not matter? What do you mean? I'm not trying to just run the guy into the ground, but it's their second-round pick. Like, at some point, winning has to matter, doesn't it? Doesn't it have to matter for people to keep their jobs? It doesn't matter for you and I, because you and I aren't getting fired over their performance this year. I think that there are consequences to a really bad performance this year for these guys.
All right, Ken?
Yeah.
Why did they trade that pick for next season?
Well, probably to go out and get their quarterback, but that doesn't mean that Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry are off the hook. Yeah.
No, that's fine. But, like, just because this dude has a transgression doesn't mean that they're, like, still not, like, on the hook or off the hook. Like, the kid went out, like, he made a mistake. Here it is. Like, you know, it doesn't matter if he played for a third of the year, a half of a year. It's the same thing with your quarterbacks. You're going to start a 40-year-old quarterback. You got a backup quarterback that, seriously, you've spent a fifth-round draft pick.
So you're saying, I don't know if I'm following Dustin. I don't know if I'm following. Are you saying it's no big loss?
Junkins? Absolutely not. You don't have anything else in place, Ken. Nothing.
All right, I disagree. Justin, thank you very much for the call.
I would say
I disagree.
Well, here's also why it's a huge deal. Not to everybody, because we talk all the time that if you're really good, fans will... They'll put up with stuff. Like Deshaun Watson, had he have gotten the Browns to the Super Bowl, the AFC Championship game, playoff wins, we would have buried a lot of the allegations. We would have buried, you know, the incidents and everything that had happened with the NFL. Eventually, people would have swallowed, you know, had to stomach a lot of the stuff when it came to Deshaun Watson, but they would have cheered for him, and eventually they would have found him more relatable than what he is now, which is not relatable. Not, you know, people are bashing him on his wedding, you know, when Jimmy Haslam allegedly at his wedding, people are mad at Jimmy Haslam. Like, it's all different if you win games, but to start your career off with this, you're a Cleveland Brown, you represent the Browns, you represent the city, and to be tied in and linked at all to domestic violence, immediately they're fans that want nothing to do with them already.
Well, yes, and I think it's short-term and long-term problems. What you just said. Short-term is, I don't have him. I mean, every single win, they're not going to win that many games this year. When I say six, I think I got people saying I'm a homer. I'm just trying to get to a threshold to keep people safe. Because, again, another ranking came out, and guess where Kevin was, and another big media ranking for where the head coaches are. So there must be something there that everybody else in the world thinks is good that a lot of Browns fans don't like. So if he can stay around, maybe it will come to fruition. I'm not sure. So I don't want to let go of another good coach if that were to be the way things go. So I need to get to a threshold. Losing Quinshon Judkins doesn't help me get to a threshold. So short term, it hurts me in trying to win football games. And then long term, when I'm building evidence against Andrew Berry for his own job, I got 2 years in a row where second round draft picks weren't able to make an impact on my football team because of off-field transgressions. 2 years in a row. And one of those, I didn't even have a first-round pick. I had Mason Graham this year, if I'm Andrew Berry. We'll see how Mason works out. And these last 2 years, I didn't even get a first-round pick last year, and then my second-round pick ended up getting in trouble. And my second-round pick this year ends up getting in trouble. I mean, this is big stuff that has serious consequences that roll downhill for everybody else.